Hey guys, it's Andrea. Today, everyone aboard the Enterprise is the most supportive friend ever. Beverly has the biggest ego in the universe, and we ask the question, why didn't she keep eye contact with everyone at all times? Stay with us.
Welcome to the TNG podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek: The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
Hey, I'm your co-host, Andrea. Today, we're talking season 4, episode 5, entitled Remember Me, which I'm so excited to talk about. It's one of my all-time faves. This episode was written by Cliff Bohl and directed by Lee Sheldon. The USS Enterprise docks at Starbase 133, where Dr. Beverly Crusher greets her elderly friend and mentor, Dr. Dalen Quaice. After taking him to his quarters, discussing the loss of old friends, Dr. Crusher visits Wesleyan Engineering. Wesley attempts to make a static warp bubble, but the experiment appears to fail. As the Enterprise leaves Starbase, Dr. Crusher finds that Dr. Quaice is missing with no record of him ever coming aboard the ship.
Uh-oh. I thought you were going to do bum, 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 but uh-oh works too.
You know what? I didn't want to be predictable.
Very wise. Very wise.
You know, maybe next time I'll hit you with a rut-row. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, don't tell me now, like, let it be a surprise. So my initial thoughts on this was, I do remember this episode. I remember this is the one where Beverly seems like she's going crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, I love a good crazy episode. I love an episode where a character is just kind of losing it and they go through all these different emotions on camera. Like, it's just so fascinating for me to watch them really take their character in a new direction. So I love episodes like that. Mm-hmm. I usually skip this one because,
God,
because I just remember my overall impression of this episode as a memory was Beverly's upset that Wesley's going to the academy. So she like makes up this whole thing about how sad she is to lose people. And so in rewatching it, I'm like, oh, that's not what it was at all. That's nice. That's what I always remember. So I'm always like, I don't want to watch an episode about being sad to be an investor.
Like guilt tripped. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, that's what I felt like it was about. But this actually was a super fun episode. It was a total mystery episode.
Yeah.
It was really great. And which is more of like a final thoughts. But my initial thought was like, I always skip this one. Let's see what it is. I don't know if I remembered it correctly. And I'm happy to say I did not remember this episode correctly. So that was great. Cause all the other times I've been proved right. The episode I skipped, all the other times I've been like, yep, that was a good call.
Okay. See, my initial thoughts were, oh my God, it's Remember Me, which when we are done reviewing every single episode of TNG, I think both of us should come up with like our top 10 favorite episodes. Mm-hmm. And this one is up there in like top 5. I really love it. I love the like twist, you know, portion of the episode where you know, how we, and we'll get to that. Like there's kind of a reveal of like, things aren't exactly as they appear. And it's like, oh my God. So this one is really, really cool. So let's just jump right in. We start off with a chief medical officer's log, which is kind of cool. We don't get those often. Mm-hmm. They're stopping off at Starbase 133 for personnel transfer and some other stuff. And I don't know if you spotted this, but it jumped out at me like in a big way, where when the Enterprise is docking or approaching Starbase 133, and then later when it's docked and you see the gangplank and the people walking back and forth, those are the identical shots from the episode 11001001, where they're at Starbase 74 and the Bynars are coming aboard. And I was like, oh my God, I've seen these shots like totally before. And they're beautiful, so I'm not mad at it. But I was like, I recognize that. That's from a different episode.
I did not at all recognize that, but that's really smart for them to reuse scenes that like totally fit here. There's no reason to reinvent the wheel.
No reason whatsoever. This episode was actually what is referred to as a bottle episode or a bottle show, where you don't have any like major guest stars. You use like pre-existing sets. Like you don't build anything new. Mm-hmm. And like, it really is, it's just like just the crew. There aren't any like new aliens or new anything.
Yeah.
They're just aboard the Enterprise. There's no away mission. So it's a bottle show, which is meant to like save money for the production. So when they do those like huge, like Borg episodes and whatnot, that's where you can spend that money. But I still think this is such a freaking great episode. This episode in my mind disproves the theory that bottle shows are like not as good as like important as like the big money episodes.
You know, that's a really good point, because I didn't notice until you said it right now that it's a bottle show. I'm like, yeah, you know, they only did the bridge, sick bay, like they did engineering and then the bridge and sick bay. Like they didn't do many places.
Yeah.
And they didn't need to for this story. And that just goes to show too, that it's all about story, right? Mm-hmm. We love, like, don't get us wrong. We love a good set. We love a good monster makeup.
Do I ever. Oof.
But to be able to tell a good story always comes first. Like that compelling storyline, you could have the whole episode take place in three locations on the ship and it's fine. And it actually reminds me of that episode back in, I think, season one, where Picard, like future Picard came back in time 6 hours or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like the whole episode
time squared.
Time squared. And the whole episode again took place like just on the ship, kind of back and forth, the shuttle bay, the bridge, the observation lounge, just kind of back and forth. And that episode was great. Like it was great.
So
I didn't
great.
Feel like I was missing anything. And the same with this, like I didn't feel like I was missing anything. I didn't even
Nothing.
Notice.
No, didn't even notice. Because look, you've got those big money episodes like Skin of Evil, where they're on that cat shit planet and they've got, you know,
the tar monster and all
that
stuff.
All that Armus and all
shuttle
that.
Shuttlecraft that's crashed into the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's a garbage, horrible piece of shit episode. And this one is 100%. Like magnificent, you know? So yeah, I've never heard you jump on the bandwagon to trash something so fast in my life. Oof,
that episode was rough.
It really was. But okay. So Beverly's old friend, Dr. Dalen Quayce, comes aboard to travel with the Enterprise to his homeworld. And we learn that his wife has passed away and he's lived there with her for years and her absence is just too glaring. So he kind of wants to just like go back to his old planet, whatever. And I just think it's lovely to see Beverly with like an old friend and mentor. And they're kind of just walking down the hallway arm in arm and talking about life. And yeah,
it kind of reminds me of the Tin Man episode when the telepath came onto the ship and was chatting with Troy and was just like, Dee, how is it? How's everything? And I was like, oh, she's got a friend who's not Riker. You know, like it was just really, it's just like such a, it's a nice slice of life. Right. Or Beverly. It's a nice slice of life that says, oh, they had a life before the Enterprise. Like it was very cool.
Yeah, it is very cool. And as they're walking and talking, they're talking about how like people they know and love are gone. And Dr. Quayce is like, you know, one of the bad things about getting older is that everybody you sort of knew is like moved on in some way. Like they've either moved away or they've died and like you don't really know anybody anymore. And it's really sad. And I think it's very, very true. Mm-hmm. Now she drops him off at his quarters. And in thinking about, you know, she did talk a little bit with Dr. Quayce about, even though she didn't have the years and years that Dr. Quayce had with his wife, she and Jack had like a number of years together and she knows what it's like to lose a spouse and like how that glaring emptiness, you know, can really be like so distracting. Mm-hmm. So she's thinking about these people that she's known and loved that are gone. She's like, let me go check on my son. So Wesley's in main engineering. He's trying out this new experiment. Geordi is rushing him because it's like, buddy, we are leaving Starbase. Like we gotta
go. This is going to come down on Geordi if the captain's like engage. And he's like, well, so we want to, but what happened was, and we still don't have the warp core, but I will get it. And that's just not Geordi's style. Geordi's like, right away, sir. Right. So he's just like, Wesley, cut the crap and get this done with. And Beverly does like the creepy mother stare where she comes in and just looks at just
around the corner
Wesley with this big smile, this big dopey smile on her face. And he's just like, hey, mom, I'm kind of busy. And she's like, just looking at you,
just watching you sleep or something.
Which I'm sure is, you know, if I was a mother, maybe that would be so sweet. But as not a mother, as a child who's experienced,
can I help you with something?
Scare, yeah. I don't.
Can I help you with anything? Yeah.
It's like very uncomfortable.
Yeah. And so it's not great timing either because Geordi is being rushed to hell by Geordi to be like, hurry it up, like wrap it up. We need to leave.
Right. Any minute, Picard's going to say, let's go.
Yeah. So, and we're still here with like our hands up our pants, like not being ready. So Wesley's trying out this new experiment. He's got this kind of cool donut shaped bubble that he's sort of messing around with. And as he's pushing buttons, we see this kind of flash of light and Geordi and Wesley are like, what the heck was that? That was weird. And they kind of just brush it off. And Wes looks up and realizes that Beverly has like left or she's gone. And he's like, okay, well, she must've just, you know, she saw I was busy. She was gone. Mm-hmm. Now, I love this episode for a number of reasons, which I will talk about. But the first part of this kind of mystery starts to happen here where Beverly goes to visit Dalen Quayce to take him for tea or something, but he's not home. And she's like, they're like, his things are not here, but he's like old and frail. So that's not good. And she asks the computer where Dr. Quayce is. And the computer tells her that there is no Dr. Quayce aboard the Enterprise. And that's, I think, when it cuts to the credits, it cuts to like the opening credits. Mm-hmm. So Beverly enlists the help of Worf and security to locate Dr. Quaise, but they can't find him anywhere. And this is where, like, we start seeing these strange things start to unravel. Like, Worf has no memory of a passenger named Quaise being brought aboard the Enterprise.
Which he should know as the chief of security. That's yes. part of their protocols.
Absolutely look, should know.
We've got protocols. So who knew?
We do. We have standard operating procedures. We have SOPs, which is great. Now, Worf does point out, even if Dr. Quaise is elderly and fell down somewhere and got hurt or something, why would his possessions be missing? It's like, that's a good point. So they go to talk to Picard, and Picard is like, let's just cross every T and dot every I and make sure we can find him. Also, Beverly, can you hang back for a minute so I can talk to you? And he's like, Beverly, sorry about your missing friend, but also in the future, please let me know, like, if you are expecting a passenger. And she's like, I did. I like sent you this request like weeks ago. Yeah.
So again, we're learning there's more protocols. These more things SOPs. We've never heard of before on the show, that there was any kind of thing yep. that you need to do to bring random people on board.
Yeah.
It's like a whole thing. It's like you have to ask Picard and get permission. The chief of security has to know.
Yep. Everybody's got to know.
The transporter chief's got to know. Like, there's all of these people who had to be aware of Dr. Quaise's existence mm-hmm. and coming aboard this ship. And now yeah. it looks like not only is he gone, not only are his possessions gone, but absolutely no one has a memory of approving his being on the ship at all.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, they also are like, well, these are kind of weird, like, coincidences that nobody seems to know him. And Beverly says, you know, he's served aboard Starbase 133 for like 6 years. So Data contacts Starbase 133 and they have no record of Dr. Quaise serving, and Starfleet has no record of him either. And you know what? This is one of the things I love so much about this episode. Beverly is like, I know him. Like, I know he was here. Mm-hmm. And the crew is like, okay, we are just going to back you 100% and let's do some really deep dives and find out what the mystery of the missing doctor is all about. Because
at no point is anybody going, he just doesn't exist. You made it up. At no point.
Exactly. They're like, at no point.
Triple scans, double the scans. Look deeper. Look further. Is there some mind control? Is there a temporal distortion? I mean, they're really like
they're
behind
on
her.
It.
Behind her.
They mm-hmm. are. And I love that is so supportive. And
imagine
really,
that. Imagine that kind of support in any typical work environment.
That's it right there. Because we don't have that.
This is why you would never leave the Enterprise. Right? If you had a whole, if you said anything. Yeah. If you said something that you're concerned about and people took your concern so seriously. I mean, I'm trying to put myself in that position yeah, where I'm in a yeah. workplace where I have a concern. Usually the concerns are brought to kind of your higher ups, and your mm-hmm. higher ups decide if that's important or not. You know, they prioritize, and then maybe yeah. they move forward with it. Maybe they don't. Maybe they try to do something. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. Right.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of free will going on here, but to have an environment where if you have a concern, everybody goes into action yep. to address it is amazing.
I love it so much. I mean, I can't tell you the number of times that I have expressed a genuine concern for something in my workplace and for it to be either completely blown off mm-hmm. and to be treated like I'm just causing trouble, which is the least of my priorities. But also, if it is taken up to the higher ups, they're like, we'll look into it. Thank you so much. And then you never hear anything about it again. Whether anything is done about it or not, you really don't hear anything about it again. And mm-hmm. I love that Beverly's like, I know I saw him. And as viewers, we're on Beverly's side too, mm-hmm. because Beverly didn't just totally run onto there. The screen and go, my friend is missing. And you're like, is he though, Beverly? Like, we saw him. So as viewers, we know something is up. And I fucking love that the crew is like, Beverly says something's off. I want a level one diagnostic on the whole universe. Go. It's like, yes. Now, one of the people who for sure saw Dr. Quaise was Chief O'Brien, because he was on duty when Dr. Quaise was beamed aboard. So Dr. Crusher and Riker go talk to Chief O'Brien, and Chief O'Brien's like, I don't have any memory of like Dr. Quaise, but I did see you. And she's like, well, do you mean?
Yeah. He's like, he just kind of popped in and kind of said hello. And then he popped out. So she pulled a Troy.
And just wandered in to be like, hey guys, what's going on in here?
what's going on in Turbolift?
Yeah. Huh?
Having yep. a good day in Turbolift. Okay, yep. cool.
And as it turns out, this chest announcing her wedding started talking and like jewels popped out. Yeah.
If you guys have not seen the episode where a Troy has an arranged marriage with this really hot guy, you've got to see it just because it's hilarious.
now, and ridiculous. This is how my memory works. I have a very good memory for numbers. I do remember it's season one, episode 10. I can't tell you the name of that episode. So I don't know.
Watch, it's going to come to me in like 5 minutes and we're going to be like, that's the episode.
So, or maybe it's not episode. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, he's like, look, you did come in and you kind of looked around and you said, thank you. And then you just kind of left. And Beverly's like, what?
So that's not what happened at all.
Yeah, that's not what happened at all. And fucking Riker is like, you know, let's just have a scan done on Chief O'Brien because a lot of people were beaming in and out. It's possible he might have forgotten. Again, they've got Beverly's back.
And what's crazy is that even now, even in that moment, he doesn't say, let's do a scan on you, Beverly, right? Like, or Beverly's not, and Beverly's also not saying, like, maybe I need a scan on myself. Like, it's, she's not at all thinking there's anything wrong with her. They're still like,
yes.
Like, their first thought is, we better scan O'Brien. He doesn't remember.
Yeah.
Not like we better scan Beverly. She's the only one who remembers, which is really interesting.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I love that they're like, well, Beverly's got to be right. Let's just make sure that everything is like perfectly fine with mm-hmm. Chief O'Brien. And so Chief O'Brien comes to see Dr. Crusher and she starts running for some his, tests for on
his
him.
Mandatory scan.
Yeah.
To make sure his yep. memory hasn't been altered.
Yep. And Dr. Crusher, and here's a little Easter egg. She calls for Dr. Hill and Dr. Silar.
I noticed that. I was like, Dr. Silar is still on the Enterprise. Oh, I
feel like Dr. Silar is the character we all deserved to have, but never got. We got her for like 2 seconds and I wanted to see more of her. And also the actress whose name is not at the tip of my brain, who plays Kalar.
Yeah.
Also plays Dr. Silar. And she's just so freaking awesome. Like, I just want to see more of her.
She's so great. And also this answers like a major criticism that you and I have had since episode one of season one. Apparently there are three doctors on the Enterprise.
She's not the sole medical, she's the chief medical officer, but not the sole medical officer.
Yeah, which because we've only seen, besides the episode with Silar, we've only seen her medical staff, kind of like the nurses and the assistants, but we haven't seen other doctors, which makes sense if they're not on shift at the same time that she is.
Yeah.
So she's the chief medical officer, but not the only doctor. So all the times that she got possessed by drunk viruses and electricity viruses and whatever else, there were other doctors. So there you go.
Yes. Yes. So there's more than one doctor aboard the Enterprise. Thank God. Because the woman can't even have a sick day. Now, as she's running these tests, you know, she calls for Dr. Hill and Dr. Silar and they're nowhere near. And the computer tells her that there is no Dr. Hill or Dr. Silar aboard the Enterprise. And I was like, oh, the plot thickens. Like more people are disappearing. And this is the truly scary part. Nobody else notices. Or even when she brings it to their attention, they're like, Dr. Silar does not ring a bell. I don't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Geordi and Wesley start theorizing that perhaps the missing Dr. Quaise could have been caught in this like warp bubble. It's the experiment that Wesley's been working on because they had that flash of light in engineering, but the bubble didn't expand past main engineering. And now there are others missing, which makes the problem like all the more confusing. It's like, what could possibly be happening?
They explain how the warp bubble works, which is interesting now that I think about it, because it kind of means that Beverly had to understand they explain how the warp bubble works, saying that maybe if someone got caught in it somehow, they could have been shifted into another space and another time. They could have just mm-hmm. completely phased into something else because of the properties of the warp bubble. So they're like, he could be trapped in some, you know, alternate parallel universe where he's here, but not here. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, that's not good. Mm-hmm. And how do we test that? And how do we know? And you're right. They do say, but the warp bubble was only in main engineering. So it couldn't have gone all the way to sick bay and all these other places, but it's the only thing we can think of that happened that was unique to our daily activities.
Yes. It's the only thing that like wasn't a regularly scheduled like thing that happens aboard the ship. Mm-hmm. So this is like level three of ratcheting up, because level one was like Dr. Quaise is missing and Starbase 133 and Starfleet don't have any record of him. And then now mm-hmm. Dr. Hill and Dr. Silar. So that's level two. But now Beverly goes to sickbay to find it completely empty, completely. And she rushes back to the bridge to inform Picard. She's like, I should have at least 4 staff members on duty at all time. And everybody looks confused. And they're like, you don't have a staff. And this is great, Dr. Crusher, where she goes, so you're telling me I'm the sole doctor aboard a ship with over 1,000 people on it? Which
is our question totally, from the beginning.
Totally valid question. Thank you, Beverly, for finally fucking asking. And Data says, excuse me, doctor, but the entire ship's complement is 230 people. And in my notes, I wrote in all capitals, oh shit, oh shit, oh my God. Like that's what I suddenly from 1,012 down to 230.
Yeah, that was crazy. And that part was so good too, because I had the same thoughts in the exact same orders. I was like, first of all, I didn't know she had four people on staff at all times, but I thought, again, that was genius. And I love the world building happening in this episode.
Yeah.
Answering a lot of questions that I've had for some time and making things make a little more sense. Mm-hmm. And then for her to ask that question, how can I be the only one? And for them to mm-hmm. say, well, there's only like 230 people. And you're like, yeah, for 230 people, you would only need one doctor, but why do you have this giant AF spaceship?
Yeah.
With only 230 people. Don't get me wrong. I'm always saying like you don't need kids on the flagship. I think that's nuts.
Yeah. But they could have been the first to disappear. I would have been fine. I wouldn't have started asking questions until the adults started disappearing.
Just meaning it's not a safe or sensible place for them.
Yeah.
But for the ship to be so gigantic and have all these decks and levels and quarters and whatnot, why would it be flying with 230 people? They could all probably fit on the bridge.
I love that. It's Data who answers, because he is the one who has all this like categorical knowledge. Mm-hmm. He's like transportation of colonists, delegations. Like he's got all these things.
Yeah, he's like, space is just for, you know, our missions.
I love that at this point, she is starting to be like, what the F is going on? And mm-hmm. Riker starts giving her the look, which I feel like it's probably time to start giving Beverly the look. Like, mm-hmm. are you good, Bev? So Picard talks to Beverly in his ready room. And she's like, I've already run a full diagnostic on myself to make sure I haven't lost my effing mind. Everything has come up fine. There's like, with the exception of like a raised like
stress
adrenaline.
Levels.
Yeah. Like raised adrenaline levels, which would make sense under the circumstances. And she said, Jean-Luc, please return the Enterprise to Starbase 133 for a complete check. And most captains and any boss I've ever had would have been like, your opinion is noted and also like rejected. Thank you. Mm-hmm. But Picard, because he's perfect, says your word has always been good enough for me. And I'm like, I love that support so much. I would like to think that I have friends who would be the supportive if I was making some outrageous claims that nobody else seems to believe.
If I was the captain of the ship, I'd be like, no, you're crazy. Go to do the scan again. Right. Like that's my worldview. My worldview is not like, believe you no matter what, regardless of any of the evidence, that's not my worldview.
All right. So when people start disappearing on me, I will not be calling you, Charisse.
That's probably for the best. Call 911. They'll probably help you more than I will. So I wouldn't have done this. And I was really impressed again that Picard's like, your word's always been good enough for me. If you're telling me 800 people have disappeared, I don't remember these 800 people, but if that's true, 800 people could be in trouble. We're going back.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because Picard says, if I have forgotten 800 or 900 of my own crew members, I would probably want to know, like, let's mm-hmm. go back. And I love mm-hmm. that he shows that show of support. So she returns to sickbay to do God knows what, because there isn't anybody aboard the ship that needs help. And we see this like disturbance, this like flashing light and like windy vortex kind of open up mm-hmm. and almost sucks her in completely. And she like barely escapes mm-hmm. with her life. And we cut to Geordi, you know, in the observation lounge saying like, we've looked for the vortex. The sensors can't find any kind of disturbance or anything. And so Beverly's like, riddle me this. How many people are aboard the ship now? And they say 114 people. And Beverly's like, what? You know, like her brain is like melting out of her ears at this point, mm-hmm. which mine would be too. And she's like, well, ask Worf if he can run some tests. And everybody's like, I'm sorry, who? It's like Worf, the guy who never smiles. The Klingon, right? And everybody's like,
what Klingon? We don't have any Klingons on board.
Yes.
And you're like, whoa.
I thought this is Gates McFadden's expert. Like, this is a masterclass in subtlety and acting, which I don't know how hard it is because I've never been an actress, but I can tell you by watching a lot of bad acting, it's got to be really hard because her like slow slide into what feels like madness mm-hmm. while maintaining this knowledge that she knows she's right mm-hmm. is such a delicate balance. And she just managed it with such an expert hand. I was so blown away by her acting. And Dr. Crusher is one of my favorite characters of all time mm-hmm. in Star Trek TNG. So I love a Dr. Crusher centered episode, but this was it was such a delight. I love watching a skill well done. And this is exactly it. And like when we see Picard do it as well, it's beautifully, mm-hmm. beautifully done. It really is. This is why it's one of my favorite episodes beyond just the plot, which is super cool, but the acting and the like watching this woman realize she's more and more alone mm-hmm. is like it's super scary. And as it turns out, there are a number of terms for fear of being alone, because that's a large fear that people have. It's known as autophobia, isolophobia, aromophobia, and also it's mostly known as monophobia, which is this fear that you are alone or will be, like, people who say, like, I want to get married because I don't want to die alone. It's that monophobia. It's really interesting. And I think that this plays so expertly on the audience's fear of being left alone, because we know that she's right. And we know that, like, nobody else really thinks she's right anymore, you know? And it's like, oh God, oh damn it, Beverly, hang in there, girl. There's 15 more minutes. You're going to find a solution. Just hang in there.
Yeah, I know. Either you or Wesley, because you guys always save the day.
Yep.
Yeah, it's true. And I think that's probably why I like a good quote unquote crazy episode, is because we actually get to see the acting chops of these this incredible cast of people that they put together for this show.
Yes.
Which we don't always get to see. And we've mentioned before, there's a lot of exposition of, like, you know, Shield's down to 10% and stuff like that, where you don't really get to see the actor's range.
Yes.
Until you do something like this. And then you get to see all that they can do, all that they're capable of. And that's why I really tend to enjoy those episodes, because you're like, whoa, I didn't know they could do all that stuff. And this was no exception. We see Beverly and Troy walking down a corridor and just kind of talking, and Beverly saying, like, you know, just kind of sharing her concerns about, maybe I've lost my mind, I don't know what's going on. Like, what am I doing? Have I made a mistake or whatever? And Troy makes this really good point to her where she says, you know what? You've acted in the best interest of this ship and this crew. And the worst thing that could happen is that we're late to our destination.
Yeah,
because we turned around and went back to the starbase. There's, like, everything that you've done the right thing. And I just love the level-headed and non-judgmental way that she said it, because Beverly was like, you don't even believe me. I don't even believe me. Ah! You know, for Troy to be like, look, it doesn't even, what you're doing is the right thing. You did the right thing. You've done the right thing.
Again, this level of support is just astoundingly wonderful.
And refreshing.
If only we had anything like that in our real lives. But yeah, she says, I think that Troy is a wonderful person to talk to, because Troy can tell, and it's never explicitly seen in this episode, but Troy knows that Dr. Crusher thinks she's right. Like, there's no reason for Dr. Crusher to be lying or making up shit just to make it up.
Right.
And she says, so what? You've acted in the best interest of her crew, of her ship and crew. And if it turns out to be a mistake, we'll be a little late arriving to Dorenia 4. That's all. Like, and that is wonderful. And sometimes when people are really struggling with anxiety, you need a level head to be like, you know what? Worst case scenario, we're a little late to get to the grocery store. Not a big deal. Not a big deal.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's okay. And at this moment, Beverly's like, oh my God, Wesley, you know, realizing that there's only 114 people on the ship, which, by the way, how did she hear the number 114 in the observation lounge and not immediately run off looking for Wesley? Cause I'd be like, my son is missing.
Or even when she heard 230.
Yeah. Or anything. Yeah. It's only like halfway through her conversation with Troy. She's like, I gotta go.
because I could see when her medical staff disappeared that she's not thinking Wesley, you know, she might think this is just weird. This is still just, you know, who knows what, it's maybe a sick bay thing.
Yeah.
But when 800 people disappeared, that'd be the time to be like, let's go check on Wesley.
Computer, locate Wesley Crusher. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she rushes to engineering. And she's like, Wesley. And like, he doesn't answer. And she's like, oh God. And he's like, mom. And just the never having been a mom, even I was like, oh, thank God. Like,
yeah, me too. Voice, me too. Like,
thank goodness. Now,
what are the odds that he would still be there of the, like, 900 people who have disappeared? Yeah,
90% of the ship is gone, but he's still there. Now, Wesley was working on the static warp bubble, which he at the top of the episode had mentioned, like, I'm inputting like Kaczynski's equations. And it wasn't until he brought it up this scene where I was like, oh, the Kaczynski from Same. Where no one has gone before.
Same. And also I was like, but wait, Kaczynski was found to be a fraud.
Yeah.
And we discovered all
fucking around with his numbers.
Yeah. We discovered all of his equations were nonsense, which was what that whole episode was about how all his equations were nonsense.
It was, and just the traveler.
Yeah. The traveler just made things work. The traveler fixed the ship. The traveler fixed whatever with his magic.
Yeah.
And Kaczynski's equations, none of them were real and none of them actually did anything.
Yeah.
So the same thing. It was this scene where I was like, Kaczynski, hey, I know that guy.
Yes.
And I was like, wait, what? Why are you using any of
from where no one equations? Has gone before, which is, even though it's early season one, I think it's episode 5, it's still such a freaking great episode. It's so good. And I love that they brought the traveler back into this for this.
Yeah, me too.
So,
but they had to, because Kaczynski's a fraud.
So yeah, because like, he's
why are you even playing around with his stuff?
He's the universe's, like, he's the Star Trek equivalent to Gilderoy Lockhart. You're like, you clearly just 100%. Lied your way into your position. Yeah. So whatever. If you guys didn't know, I'm a huge Harry Potter nerd. But anyway, so Wesley and Beverly are like, the only possible link to these disappearances is this experiment that kind of went haywire right at this time. And Wesley's like, well, remember, Kaczynski had a traveler, like an assistant with him. It was a traveler from Tau Alpha C. Maybe he could offer some help, but he's so far away that the message could take days to reach him. So they're like, okay, let's go talk to the captain and see if we can maybe put a message to him. And this scene always scared me as a kid, and it still freaked me out when I watched it today. As Bev and Wesley are walking out of engineering to inform the captain of their idea, Beverly turns the corner while talking and then realizes as she turns that like she's alone and that Wesley is no longer behind her. And that scared the shit out of me as a kid. And it still freaked me out today. She rushes back and realizes that he's now one of the missing. And I'm like, oh my God, which in my mind as a child watching this, because this happens again when she breaks eye contact with Picard and he disappears, where it's like, never break eye contact with anybody.
That's Keep exactly what I thought at all times.
That's like, what I thought.
That's what I thought. But I didn't think it until after Wesley disappeared in that scene. And it's like, dang, too little, too late. Like, if only you were looking at him, you know, if only you knew that before he disappeared.
Yes.
But I had the same thought where she's like, okay, let's go to the captain. And she turns the corner and he's just gone. And she looks back and he's gone. It was like, oh my gosh.
And the silence too. You're like, oh God.
Yeah, yeah, she runs back in. Wes, scary. Wes, nope, he's nowhere to be found.
Now he's actually gone.
Crap.
Yes. Now, Beverly rushes to the bridge only to realize that the only person aboard the Enterprise besides her is now Captain Picard.
Yeah, he stands. Well, when she comes into the bridge, it looks like there's no one on the bridge.
Yes.
Because you can't see the captain's chair from like the turbo lift where she opens. And then he stands up and turns around and she's just looking around with her mouth open. Like, where is the rest of the bridge crew?
Completely. No memory of any crew members. And she lovingly details each person one by one. Riker, Troy, Data, her son, Wesley. And he's like, look, I think I've been more than fair here. And this has kind of gotten out of hand. And she's like, but how can it just be us two?
What a doctor and a captain.
She's like but roaming the fucking galaxy. Yes.
Why would it just be the two of us in this giant ship with no one else? How does that,
like, we've never needed another crew.
Yeah. Yeah. We've never needed anyone else. Really? We've never needed any engineers.
No.
We've never needed any, nothing.
Like security, nothing. Okay. So he's like, all right, fine. If it makes you feel any better because of our long friendship and all that, I'm going to help you. Let's have the computer read out my vital signs, the constant like audible readout.
Yeah.
And so he sits down and we hear the computer going like blood pressure, 124 over 80, da, 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 whatever. And she starts to reveal something about him. And I feel like we got so ripped off because she's like, you know, there's something I wanted to tell you for a long time. You and I, and suddenly the vitals cut out and she broke the cardinal rule of breaking eye contact. She turns and he's gone. I was like, why did you stop looking at him, Beverly? This is what happened to Wesley. No. Like, I was so upset.
And now she's on the bridge.
Yes.
Now she's on the bridge alone. On this giant freaking ship alone.
Yes. Now she's like, oh my God. And as she's thinking this, another one of those vortexes opens up on the main view screen and she's almost sucked out. And she ends up holding on to Data's like comm panel and his chair. And as it turns out, they mounted that on a wall and had her dangling from it, like hanging down, which I read.
That's funny.
Now, a couple of things. So she gets kind of thrown from the, she gets thrown onto the chair, holds onto the chair, and then the static warp bubble or the vortex starts to collapse. And so the wind dies down and she's not sucked out. Just after this shot was filmed, Gates McFadden learned that she was actually pregnant. Which was so interesting, where I was like, oh my gosh, her son James was born later that year. And the godfather for child is none other than Brent Spiner.
Which
I think is so great.
That which is shows super just how close sweet.
Isn't that wonderful? That I was like, oh sweet. My God, I want Brent Spiner to be my godfather. I don't have one. Can you also, can you computer locate Brent Spiner? Anyway, so, so that's a little aside that I found, which is kind of sweet and neat. And also she probably wouldn't have wanted to do those stunts if she knew she was newly pregnant, but whatever, turns out everything was fine. But here's this plot twist in the episode. And I freaking love it. As the vortex starts to fail, you know, and Beverly is not sucked in, we hear Geordi and Wesley's voices like really distorted. And they're trying to keep the integrity of the bubble. And they're like, I'm losing it. It's failing. And as the bubble collapses, we see Geordi and Wesley in main engineering and they're like, damn it. And as a viewer, you're like, wait, What is happening right now? Mm-hmm. What is happening? And as we realize, the only person who's disappeared is Beverly. She got trapped in the flash of that warp bubble and disappeared. So when Wesley looked up and, you know, kind of thought that like she might've just taken off, you know, it's like, you're in the mm-hmm. middle of something, I'll come back. She just mm-hmm. left. She got trapped in this warp bubble. And the thing she was thinking about when this warp bubble started, because the Traveler was all about thoughts shaping your reality, she had been thinking about, she had been losing, you know, all these people that have like been lost over time. Mm-hmm. And so it shaped the reality that she was in, where like people were just disappearing. So the whole crew was fine except for her. And I thought that was such a freaking brilliant piece of writing mm-hmm. to make this plot twist happen, where like, as viewers, we feel like we're in the know, Charisse. We saw Dr. Quaise. Yep. We know who Worf is. We're like, mm-hmm. no, we're good. Like,
Beverly's we know the right. ship had more crew than just her and Picard.
Yeah. So we're like certain that we're right until we realize we don't have we have been sucked into the static warp bubble with
yep.
Beverly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh my God, we've been getting it wrong the whole time. It's so brilliant. It's just one of the most brilliant plot twists I can
because
recall.
As you're watching the vortex kind of fade away and she's like, and she's there by herself, you're kind of like, shoot, how are we going to get out of this one? Mm-hmm. You know, what is going on? And everybody's gone. And how are we going to get them back?
Yeah.
And then when you go back to the Enterprise and you find out that Beverly's been trapped in a bubble, then you're like, oh my gosh, everybody's okay. All is well. But mm-hmm. Beverly is the one who's screwed. And we just need to get her back on this side. And then
yep.
everything's going to be okay.
Yep.
So it like gives you the solution, but also gives you another problem because the bubble collapsed. And now they're like, without the bubble, how will we get her back?
Yep.
So absolutely. Now it's like this relief followed by tension immediately.
Yes. Right? Yes. And who is to appear? None other than the Traveler from Tau Alpha C.
Bum, bum, bum.
And he basically, yes, totally bum, bum, bum. He explains kind of what I just said, that our yeah. thought shape reality. And just like in the episode where no one has gone before, the very thing that Beverly was thinking about when she was trapped in the warp bubble is what shaped the constructs of the reality as she knows it now.
Right. And the Traveler explains that we don't know what reality she's created, but she's created yeah. one of her own making. And they yes. were asking like, is she okay? Is she going to be okay? The bubble just collapsed. Like, what's going on? You know, it's shrinking, whatever. What they did was they went back to the Starbase 133 mm-hmm. where the bubble was originally made.
Yes.
So they can kind of like recapture its shape or whatever, but they yeah. saw that it was shrinking in that original location. So, you know, Wes is like, is she okay? Is she going to be okay? And the Traveler's just saying, whatever world she created, that's going to determine if she's okay or not. She's going to determine yes. if she's okay. And you're like,
and
uh-oh.
He cannot go through the vortex because it's her reality, not his. So he can't exist in that reality to get her out. It's not just as simple as a portal. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. not just as simple as a portal. And this is another reason, yet another of the like 500 reasons I love this episode, is because this is like extremely delicious deductive reasoning on Beverly's part. Right. Like we really see where she got her Starfleet medical, like critical thinking chops from. She can't be trusted to put a neural transmitter on somebody's exposed brain or remove Jono's freaking helmet when he has a potentially broken neck, but she can sort out that she's trapped in this bubble. So she starts working out the solution aloud and she asks the computer to set course for Tau Alpha C because that was the last conversation she had.
Yeah. With static warp bubble Wesley. She asked herself a really good question. I have to say, you know, props to Beverly for asking lots of good questions this episode.
Yes.
She says, if there's nothing wrong with me, because she's still convinced there's nothing wrong with her, by the way, mm-hmm. like still, mm-hmm. she's like, no, I'm good. I'm good. I did the scan. I'm good. You know, she was convinced everybody else's minds have been wiped. She's fine. Now that yes. everyone else is missing, she's still fine.
Yeah.
So she says, if there's nothing wrong with me, there must be something wrong with the universe. And I honestly had this moment where I was like, wow, that has got to be the most self-centered thought.
Oh my God. I wrote in my notes, it takes a seriously exploded ego to come to that conclusion, but good for her. Cause it's the right one.
It was right.
But I would never be like, well, if there isn't anything wrong with me, then the laws of physics must be wrong. What? That's ridiculous.
Yes. Good on her because it happened to be right. But who yeah. in the world would ever have the thought it must be the universe? That's wrong.
Fucked up.
Yeah. I know I'm right. Like, dang. But right? she says this out loud and she happens to be right that it's the universe that's wrong. And then she starts piecing it together. Like, wait a minute. This reminds me of the time with the Traveler and where our thoughts shape our reality. And maybe yes. my thoughts have shaped this reality. And
yes, she really okay. starts to put it together. She really does. And then mm-hmm. she tries to set course for Tau Alpha C and the computer is like, she's like, hello, I said, set course. And the computer's like, please specify a destination. She's like, I just said Tau Alpha C. And the computer says, there's no record of Tau Alpha C existing on current star maps. And I was like, oh God, the universe is collapsing on her, right?
Yes. And she's like, view screen on, you know, let me see, where's the star
base? And it's just this mist.
Like, yeah, it's like, there is no star base. Like, what the heck? Turn on the view screen and there's not even stars. Yeah, it's just like
she's just in a cloudy mist. And aboard the real Enterprise, the Traveler and Wesley are working to recreate this warp bubble, but it's starting to shrink quickly. And they're like, okay, well, at the rate that it's shrinking, we only have a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. They're like, we only have about 4.5 minutes, and there are about 5.5 minutes left on the episode. So we're like, oh God, it's really down to the wire. And
Beverly also pieces that together. She asks the computer something, and it says,
She asks the computer, what is the nature of the universe? And the computer said, because the universe is supposed to be infinite, as far as we know. The computer says, the universe is like 7,500 meters in diameter or something like that. And she's like, oh my God. So now the ship is starting to like shake and rattle and roll and like, you know, sound effects. Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to disappear from the outer edges in a circular shape.
It's basically starting to do a Back to the Future where like Michael J. Fox's character starts disappearing from the knees up kind of thing, mm-hmm. but from the very front and back of the ship. So she says, superimpose the current image of the Enterprise over this known photo, like this known schematic of the universe in same scale. And as we see, it's that warp bubble. So she's like, I recognize this. And once the universe's picture, as it currently stands with the front end, like disintegrating, is over superimposed, it's like, oh my God, I must be trapped in this warp bubble and it's closing in on me.
Which is so fascinating because, okay, and this is the part that I was saying before, which I didn't realize until we were just talking, is that she had to realize that the warp bubble, that you could get trapped in a warp bubble mm-hmm. on her own because Wesley gave her that explanation inside of the warp bubble. So this was her own knowledge somehow, which is absolutely fascinating. But she realizes I'm the one who's trapped. It wasn't Dr. Quace who got trapped. It was me.
Yeah.
So I guess I'd better get to main engineering because that's like the last place I saw the bubble.
Well, this is one problem I had with the episode. And I have like zero problems with the episode, but this is one like, so.
0.1 problems.
I have a 0.1 problem with this episode. I have 99.99 problems. and 0.1 is this one. So. She starts working out and it's this lovely deductive reasoning. And thankfully she's doing it out loud. So we, as the audience, can kind of track her progress mm-hmm. that she's like, the Traveler has said that thoughts shape reality. What was I thinking about at the time that this warp bubble, like little mini explosion happened in main engineering? Dr. Quace, everybody's disappearing. Oh my God. I started making people disappear. Oh my God. Like I'm the one who's trapped. Where do I go? Now, the problem I had with this is that the bubble is continuing to collapse and she's able to see on one of the view screens that it's getting really close to the bridge. Cause we know the bridge mm-hmm. is that little bubble on the top of the saucer mm-hmm. and it's getting pretty fucking close. And she's like, Wesley, where do I go? And I'm like, girl, this is a sinking ship type of problem right off the bat. You get to wherever the dry land is. You get the furthest place away mm-hmm. from the danger. And aboard, like on that view screen, we can see the very center of the bubble is main engineering. So get your ass to main engineering right now because this universe is about mm-hmm. to suck you out of the bridge in like 4 seconds. And she's like, Wesley, tell me what to do. Where do I go? It's like, you need to move faster, girl. Like, hurry up. Get to the middle of the ship.
I didn't even think about engineering as the place that makes the most sense for where she saw the bubble last. I just thought you need to get to the middle of the ship.
Because that's the last place it's going to collapse.
It's the last place it's going to disappear. And you should run and maybe don't take the turbo lift. Like, because that's also right there with the bridge. That's what I was thinking. Take the stairs, take the Jeffries tubes, whatever, but get to the middle of the ship. Do a site-to-site transport. Why are we taking turbo lifts and stairs? Do a site-to-site transport to the middle of the ship. And figure it out from there. Like,
if there was ever a case for emergency site-to-site transport, honey, this is it.
Transport to the middle of the ship. And then while you're in the middle, then you can say, oh, I created this. Wesley, where should I go? You can have all those thoughts when you're in the middle of the ship and not like,
buy yourself the extra 40 seconds.
Yeah.
Because as she gets off the turbo lift, which because of the ship's hull now all being compromised, the turbo lift can't take her to main engineering, has to take her somewhere near. So she starts running and we see this mist start closing in and it is right behind her. And I was like, run, Beverly, run! Like, oh, so scary. I
think it's just coming and just dissolving the world behind her. And you're like, run, go.
Yes. Now, while she's running and the nothing is like devouring everything.
Yeah.
The Traveler and Wesley start working on the bubble again. And he's like, trust yourself, Wesley, believe, or whatever it is he says.
Which
and
is
Wesley,
true, because that is how he worked with Kaczynski, because Kaczynski believed 100% in all of his equations.
Yep. Because he's got the ego. He is the only other person who'd be like, it must be something wrong with the universe, not me.
Yep.
But you know, it makes sense, because if your thoughts shape reality, you have to believe it's going to work or it's not going to work, right?
Yeah.
So Wesley closes his eyes and starts pushing buttons. And I was like, maybe you should keep your eyes open for the button pushing portion of the program. But okay. So him and the Traveler start like coming in and out of phase.
Yeah.
And Beverly is like running for her life. And the Nothing is like eating everything up. And the Nothing was like 1 second away from getting her. And she finally makes it to Main Engineering, where she sees this giant vortex, the disruption portal again. Mm-hmm. And she stops for like 6 seconds to be like,
to think about okay, it. What are you doing?
I was like, girl, the universe is disappearing right behind you. Like, it's already got the heels of your shoes in the back of your hair. Like, move. Yeah,
I had the same thought. And it reminded me of the episode where they were looking at the little like gloves to see where the contamination was.
Yes,
and they were like,
red light,
green light. Yellow light, orange light. We have 10 seconds.
Yeah, before the
shift. I need you to put some pep in your step. I felt like that about Beverly. Like, if you are running through the whole ship, you know, running for your life,
you
and
know
then
what?
You see the vortex, and then you stop and go, but the vortex seems kind of dangerous. Really? More dangerous than the Nothing that's about to dissolve you?
Which like, also, you know what we really needed was Geordi going, go, 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 you know, with the circular arm deal, rolling under the blast door.
I love when Geordi does that.
I really love it. He only does it like 3 times, but every time he does it, it's so delicious. But so she gets there, and this collapsing bubble is like nipping at her heels, and she takes a second to think about it, which is, what is there to fucking think about? She launches herself right through it, which, by the way, Gates McFadden did all of her own stunts for this episode, landing really hard on the Enterprise Main Engineering. And Wesley just like collapses, because it took everything in him to like keep himself together
to hold that vortex
to hold
open
that
with
hold
his
it open
mind or whatever.
Yeah.
With his and mind. Then we have Picard running past the collapsed Wesley without a second glance.
Who cares about him? He's fine. Yeah.
And then helping Beverly up. I was like, dang, that was kind of cold. I mean, couldn't reach out a hand. You're just like, anyways. Beverly, are you okay?
Picard is like, Beverly, I will get with you if we get rid of the boy. Okay. Like, I don't want to be a stepdad to anything. So it turns out all is well again. There are 1,014 people aboard the Enterprise, including Dr. Dalen Quaise, which is the number it should be, which we're not counting the Traveler. And obviously a baby must have been born, because the ship's complement has always been 1,012. But I was like, whatever. Like, it's the number it should be. We'll count the Traveler on there fine, including Dr. Quaise. So he's there, and all's well that ends well. And I just went, if somebody needs to have themselves a good lie down and maybe take stock of their life or whatever, it's Beverly right in this moment. So that's where the episode ends. Now, I have some trivia about this. In the writing of this episode, the Traveler was added at the last minute. According to one of the producers, Michael Piller, he says, quote, the first two drafts did not have the Traveler in it. The first draft ended with the realization of what had happened turning out to be a dream episode. And we didn't find that satisfying, thank God. So we decided to end the end of Act 3 to pull everything from the first 60 pages of the first three acts and tell the audience what's going on the other side of the warp bubble and how they're trying to get Beverly back. That's that plot twist. Mm-hmm. We spent the next two acts deciding how to get her back. At the beginning of the year, we said we wanted to bring the Traveler back for something. So we thought, why not use him for this episode to help get Beverly back? I got that from Captain's Logs, the unauthorized complete Trek voyages. And I thought it was super neat that they, like, since season one have been like, we really need to do something more with the Traveler, but we don't know what. And I am so glad they did not make this a dream episode, because it would have been like, great, everything is fine and normal. And that's a relief. But also, like,
it would have felt like we were cheated.
Yes. It feels to me the dream episodes where it turns out this horrible nightmare was just a nightmare and nothing more, feels to me like the Avengers with the time stone thing, where they're like, oh, somebody died. Oh, bring them back. Oh, it wasn't real. Oh, undo, control, alt, delete. Like, So I love that they didn't go that route. I am so thankful.
And I'm glad they brought in the Traveler. Like, how fun to have. I love that they did it and that this wasn't a Traveler episode and this wasn't a Wesley episode, but they brought in the Traveler in the perfect touch. It was the perfect touch of like, oh yeah, I remember that guy. And oh yeah, only Wesley's the one who can work with him, because the Traveler said Wesley's special. Like, I like that touch a lot.
Couldn't agree more. Could not agree more with you on that. And just the fact that we as the audience feel like we're aboard Beverly's nightmare, only to realize at the end of Act 2 that we are trapped just alongside her and we don't know how to get out. It's like, mm-hmm. oh my God, it's such a paradigm shift for the audience, which we rarely get. You know, you get the murder mysteries where you either don't know who did the killing, mm-hmm. right? And then you kind of discover along the way as the other characters do, mm-hmm. or you do see who does the murder at the beginning and you know who the murderer is all the time, but nobody else does. But mm-hmm. at no point in those kind of mystery type stories does the audience perspective shift where you're like, oh God, I thought we knew what was going on and we don't. Mm-hmm. And that was just so masterful. I really, really, really love this episode. That's why this episode is really up there in like my top five, top 10 episodes. I really, really love it. Do you have any final thoughts before we wrap?
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't say that better than you just did, but yeah, I really enjoyed the mystery aspect of it. And, I really like that as we're watching it, you're kind of like, how do we get out of this? How do we solve this? How do we bring these people back? Where's our time mm-hmm. stone? Mm-hmm. There's no clear answer until the end when it's answered. So I really like that.
Yeah, I love it too. Well, guys, that's this week's episode. Next week, we are talking season 4, episode 6, entitled Legacy. Thank you so much for nerding out with us. As always, we love you and we will see you next week.
Bye. Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. We'll see you next time.